and your karma's healed, that's impossible. That's the opposite of what karma's all about.
Well, and I know, and you've traveled around the world. You've traveled around the Far East, and you know, you are a medical doctor. You are my friend. You are a brain. And welcome back to On the Edge, Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. Are you still using the Coker, or are you just Dr. Ross?
No. Well, to my patients, I'm Dr. Ross, but I still use Carolyn Coker Ross because Carolyn Ross is such a common name. And, you know, they get so messed up.
About you? Please.
That's my point. There's nothing.
Back to On the Edge. Is that you? Was that your doorbell ringing?
Yeah, but it's probably just leaving packages.
Oh, okay. Well, don't worry about it. You need to go answer it because the brains can wait a minute.
I don't think so, but maybe. I don't think so.
Because you know they catch your stuff off your porch now. They got nothing but time to sit there and watch.
It's okay.
Okay. It's okay. Well, welcome back to On the Edge. You know, you were just with us a couple weeks ago, and we really had a powerful, powerful show. You and Jay Westbrook, and we talked about the effects of what's going on with the corona virus and the impact that it's having on people when it comes to addiction and grief and loss. And you guys, the show is going through the roof. People are loving it. So I'm going to invite them to go back and listen to you one more time here.
And speaking of COVID-19, since this last show that you and I did with Jay, there's been so much information now coming out about what's happening with African Americans and other people of color and COVID. So I think one message we didn't talk about then that we need to, you know, talk about is people need to take this seriously, because more people of color are dying from COVID. They're dying faster, they're getting it and ending up in the hospital and then passing away. And it's just, I think a lot of it's because we haven't gotten the word out in our communities.
It is, but you know, we have a disadvantage, a disproportionate number of people that have access to medical care, quality medical care. A lot of people are in denial. I go out right now and folks just think it's a regular old sunny day. I'm masked up and gloved up and they're tired of it.
Yeah.
You know, they're tired of it and they're not taking it seriously because they're hearing.
Well, I can tell you, because I said to you, I had presumptive coronavirus infection. I've never been so sick in my life. And if you ever have had it, you would be very frightened to get it because it's not the flu. It's not. I mean, people are talking about, oh, it's just another thing like flu. It's not the flu. I literally thought I was going to die. I was so sick. And it lasted. It's still plaguing me, and it's been over a month, you know, with cough and fatigue. But in the middle of it, it was, I couldn't get out of bed. You know, I could drag myself to the kitchen, make some soup, and go back to bed. That was it.
Now, when you got your test, what type of test did they take? Did they take the swab up your nose?
The swab up my nose, yep. Mm-hmm.
Was it painful? But it looks awful.
Not really. It's not painful. It's uncomfortable, but it's not painful by any means. But the problem is the testing isn't very accurate. About 30% of people who actually have COVID test negative on that test. And there, you know, you're now starting to see reports in the media where people are in the hospital with pneumonia and they test them two or three times before the test shows that they have the COVID-19. So the testing is not accurate, and we really need that antibody test to be able to determine who has had it and who still has it, and you know, to be more accurate.
Right, but now they want to send folks back to work and they out there protesting to go to the beach. I'm gonna sit back and watch and see how it works for them. Because
I think it's easy. You know, there's so much conflicting information in the media. I mean, we're really lucky in California that our leadership here,
right,
you know, Governor Newsom, has been really strong. He's been clear. He's been a good leader. He told it like it is. He's telling us facts.
Right.
But, you know, people listen to a lot of other stuff where they're getting, you know, the wrong information and being misled. And honestly, this is the most dangerous thing we've ever faced in our country.
Oh, sure.
Really
is. It's running rampant. And, you know, another thing, people are not taking these numbers serious because they're so big. You know, 5,000, you know, 800 people died last night and 140,000 people. These numbers just don't even seem realistic.
Yeah.
And so,
but when you hear the stories, like, you know, I was just listening to on OWN Network, they have a COVID updates on a regular basis, and listen to the story of a Black man in Milwaukee who had two beautiful adult children, young adult children, a lovely wife. They just thought he had a cold. And within 3 days, he was rushed to the hospital, put on a ventilator, and they never got to see him again. And when you hear the stories, you know, it's heartbreaking to think that that could be your brother, your mother, your sister, your father, you know? And it could be anyone you know. And
well, my girlfriend just went to New York. Her mother was in an assisted care facility in New York. Yeah. She had to fly from San Diego and the safe and secure into Midtown Manhattan. They put all her mother's stuff in a box and took the boxes outside and said, you can go through her belongings out there. She's of Jewish heritage. She was not able to keep with the traditional norms of burying her mother within 3 days.
Right.
She was telling me what was going on in the airplane. She said there was 20 people on the plane.
Wow.
And the way that they had constructed them and sold the tickets, they were all in one specific area. And the flight attendant said, no, y'all need to spread out.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Then she transferred into Florida, and there were 6 people on that plane. Mm-hmm. And now she's back here, and she's scared to death because now she's in quarantine. Yeah. But she wasn't able to say goodbye to her mother. She wasn't.
I know. That's what's so heartbreaking is.
It is heartbreaking.
And heartbreaking for the person who's sick. I know when I was sick, you know, none of my kids could come over because I was terrified of getting them sick, you know. And I was lucky that my youngest is so computer savvy. He got online and found a delivery service to deliver me some Kleenex and some NyQuil, you know. But that's how desperate it is that, and you feel so, I mean, it's so hard to be that sick and be alone. Honestly, it's really tough. And on the other hand, you know, we even, like, both my son and I have the same birthday. We talked about, I was feeling better then. This was 2 weeks ago, April 2nd, we talked about, well, maybe now, you know, we could get together just for our birthday. I woke up in the middle of the night with a panic attack, just thinking, I don't want to have any chance of giving this to him because it's so bad, you know? And he woke up with the same thing. He called me the next morning. He said, Mom, I really want to see you, but I don't think I should. What if I'm one of those people who's carrying it?
Right. We have no idea. The testing is not adequate. But that's a perfect segue into our interview today, because we want to talk about intergenerational trauma. Yeah. Folks is going to be traumatized forever, if they are a senior citizen, if they are 5 or 6 years old. They have never seen anything like this, and the impact. Tell us.
And I think the segue also is in talking about African Americans or people of color who are getting COVID. A lot of it is linked, you know, these health to the chronic health issues that our people have, that people of color have: diabetes, you know, heart disease, hypertension, all of those things, and that puts them. Asthma, and that puts them at higher risk to have serious complications of COVID. But why is it that our people, African Americans, Latinx, you know, all of the people of color, have more of these chronic diseases than people, other people, you know, white people? And that goes back to intergenerational trauma. So let me just tell you the history of this and how I got involved in it, because it's very interesting, but it's a little bit deep to wrap your mind around it.
Girl, we brains. Take us.
I know, that's right. I forgot. Your brains. Where's my sign? I don't have my sign now.
I got one for you. I got you.
Okay, good.
Take us right there, because I'm ready. I'm ready. Brains.
All right. So this, you know, the study of intergenerational trauma started with offspring of Holocaust survivors. So back in the 60s, researchers started noticing these differences in offspring of Holocaust survivors. The survivors themselves said they felt different than their peers, that they felt that there was something different about them than other people who weren't from that background. And they started realizing that things like depression, anxiety, even PTSD was higher in this population. So if you think about it, you're a Holocaust survivor, you automatically, or most of them automatically, had post-traumatic stress disorder. And many times the way they coped with that post-traumatic stress disorder was something that's called psychic numbing. So they would just, you know, shut off their emotions. And when they had children, they would parent them from this emotionally distant place. And the children then felt that that was like emotional abuse or neglect. They felt, you know, emotionally abused or neglected. So the bottom line is, the person who was in the Holocaust was traumatized. They coped in whatever way they could cope. But the effects of their trauma now show up in their parenting, and also in the change in the expression of their genes. So over the decades, you know, there may be more obesity, there may be more alcohol or drug use, depression, anxiety, etc. So that's how things got started. And then in comes the, let me just mention this, the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, which, as you know, started right here in San Diego, and now has become a multinational study, but definitely a national study, which has shown pretty conclusively that trauma in childhood is linked to a much higher risk for drug and alcohol issues, depression, anxiety, obesity, and over 40 medical conditions. So this is where people of color and risk for chronic diseases comes in, because those medical conditions that are linked to trauma are diabetes, obesity, heart disease, lung disease, asthma, you know, just the things, high blood pressure, just the things we've been talking about.
Well, you know, and I hear so many people, I talk to everybody on the planet, and I talk to a lot of energy healers. And at first I'm wondering, oh, okay, I'm not with it, I'm not understanding. But the more I hear it, the more it is incorporated in holistic medicine, the more that it is now incorporated in westernized medicine, it's extracted from Eastern philosophy, is that people really their emotions are the root cause a lot of times of these diseases, cancer.
Mm-hmm. It's really not emotions. It is trauma that's at the root cause.
Okay, and trauma. When you say trauma versus emotion, give me a difference. Yeah.
Well, emotions are a symptom of trauma.
Okay.
But trauma is, you know, a loss. Gabor Mate, who's a Canadian addiction psychiatrist, says trauma is a loss of a sense of an essential part of yourself, a sense of safety, trust, security, vitality. So when we talk about trauma, when they looked at the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, they looked at physical or emotional or sexual abuse. They looked at physical or emotional neglect. They looked at having household dysfunction like divorce or separation of parents, other things such as having a family member who's incarcerated, being in a home where your parent either has a mental illness or a substance use problem. Now, just let's focus on the Black community. How many people do you know? I mean, even within my own family, I have people who have had all of those things, basically.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So when you see that has happened, you know, when a child is raised by a parent with substance abuse, even though they don't intend to hurt their children, it is hurtful it is traumatic for children to grow up in that kind of home.
Right.
So what we're talking about when we talk about intergenerational trauma is that the effects of trauma are being passed from one generation to another to another. And when you have trauma, it doesn't change your genes. It doesn't change your DNA, but it changes the expression of the gene. So that gene for addiction or obesity could be turned on by trauma. And then that gene expression that was turned on is passed to the next generation and the next. Wow. And we can really clearly see this in a couple of communities like the Native American community. They studied these same effects there. Those children were taken from their homes. They were prohibited from speaking their language. Many of them were sexually abused in these schools, boarding schools they were sent to. And then they come back, they're coping by using alcohol or some other substance, and that starts the cycle. Right. And the same.
Because again, you know, we are a product of our environment.
Yeah, exactly. So when you talk about emotions, you know, what trauma does is it dysregulates our emotions. It makes it difficult. People who have experienced trauma have a difficult time regulating their emotions. So they try to regulate it with food or drink or drugs or anger or acting out in some way. So that's where emotions come in. But emotions are step two. Trauma is the underlying root cause.
All right. So you've given us a phenomenal definition, but how do we learn to manage that? Mm-hmm. You've given us a clear definition on how to identify it. Pay attention, brains. Okay. But now how do we treat it and move forward and break the cycle?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's no easy, simple way you can treat trauma. But I think the first thing is recognition. And in the African American community, we don't have recognition of the traumatic effects of slavery. You know, there's slavery happened, and then we were told, get an education, you know, become middle class, and just go on with your lives. But when you look back at the kinds of things that happened to our ancestors during slave times, you can recognize that is part and parcel of why so many people are experiencing these chronic diseases and why so many of our people have, you know, drug and alcohol problems and so on. So the first part is just becoming aware that there has been trauma. There's been no recognition in the African-American community of how traumatic slavery and the, not just slavery, but ongoing racism has been in our culture. So we have to really step up to the plate and be aware of that. And if in your family you have any of those ongoing traumatic experiences, the first thing is to get help. So for example, one of the mistakes that we make in many of the people of color make in their families is, say something happens to your child. You know, they've unfortunately get sexually abused by a neighbor or a family member or whatever. The first instinct is don't tell anybody, just, you know, shove it under the rug.
Right.
Isn't that right? Okay. So that child then gets a double whammy. They get abused, and then they get shut down by the person that they should be able to trust.
And the third step is if they do identify, they get shamed.
And then they get shamed. The second big mistake we make is with people in our community who suffer from depression, anxiety, bipolar, et cetera. And it's like, no. We don't go to therapists. You know, no, that's not something we do.
Girl, you know, we don't go to therapists. We don't give blood. We don't
go to doctors.
We don't believe in any of that. I'm not gonna leave you my kidneys. Nothing. You, good Lord, give it to me. I'm gonna die with it. But also, I want you to go back because people look at you visually, and they don't see quote unquote the typical black woman.
Yeah,
I mean, you have had many conversations about that. But tell them a little bit about the trauma that you experienced being a fair-skinned, curly-haired Black woman.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I did my TEDx talk, which was on my bucket list, and my TEDx talk that came out in January is on intergenerational trauma. And one of my friends called me and she said, "That was your coming out party, wasn't it?" And I, you know what? Honestly, I never thought too much about it, but it works both ways. Obviously, I had some privileges because people sometimes assumed I was white.
Right, my mother too.
But also, that is a very troubling experience, because then do I have to act white in order? Like, I can't come up to you. If I didn't know you, I wouldn't come up to you and say, "Girl, I love your afro."
Right.
Because I can't do that, because you're going to look at me and think, you know, what is this white girl talking to me like that for? Do you see what I'm saying? So anyway, it was during the process of going back in my own family's history, and we're really privileged to know our history all the way back to slavery on both sides of the family, actually. And so, you know, my grandfather was born on the plantation where his parents were slaves. And so, you know, we have stories in our family about this and so on. So when I went back and I started recognizing, okay, what do you think it's like to be born on the plantation? Okay, now your parents are no longer slaves, but they're sharecroppers. How much different is that?
Right.
Not really, you know. And then growing up in Texas and remembering seeing whenever, you know, my grandfather, who was this, he was a big deal in his small town in Texas. But he would go into the white community and all of a sudden his whole personality would change. It was kind of like he was bowing his head and shuffling. And I'm looking there, I'm thinking, this guy is like, you know, he's like an icon of the Black community.
Right.
And here he is humbling himself. I would go with him to the white hospital where, by the way, I later practiced as an ER doctor. And every year he would go and ask them if he could be on staff. And this was when I was a kid. And one of the janitors there, when I got on staff, he pulled me aside. He said, "You Dr. Hammond's granddaughter?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He goes, "I used to see your granddaddy come into this hospital. He'd be all proud. He'd wear his best suit." He said, "This year, I'm going to get on this staff of this hospital." And then I'd see him come out, and he would be, I'd say, "How'd it go, Dr. Hammond?" And he'd go, "No." And he'd have his head bowed, and he'd get. And so that was the experience that I grew up with. It was, you know, great intelligence in my family, great prosperity in many ways, but this stain of racism and slavery, which, you know, affected all of us, and we didn't really think about it. And nobody has ever come to Black people and said, "Hey, you get free therapy for life because of what happened back then," you know?
Right.
So even though I look the way I look, I felt all of that, but I just, like, you know, closed it down. And then when I started going back in my family's history, looking at all the, like, my brother, heroin addict, my other brother, another addiction, you know, sisters with these problems and that problem. And then my nieces and nephews with addictions, you know, severe obesity, all of these problems. And I'm like, wait a minute, you know, we're smart, we're middle class, we're, you know, we're doing well, but what's happening? What's happening in our family, you know? And that's when it hit me. It's like, okay, this is it. And Dr. Joy DeGruy wrote this book called The Post-Traumatic Stress Syndrome. And that's something people should read, because it really, I'm just saying, if I have a, can I just reach for a copy real quick?
Yeah,
I'll show it to you. Post-traumatic slave syndrome. This is a really great book. If any of your brains are interested in exploring the effects of slavery in the Black community, it's definitely worth reading.
Well, I'm gonna pick it up.
Yeah.
So how do we adjust? How do we move forward? Because we're gonna hit that cycle again now, especially being confined. This is a worldwide pandemic.
Yeah.
Okay. That I still don't believe that a family of four sat there and ate a couple bats.
No.
It's some wet market, and this is, you know, just spread around the world.
The bat story is really crazy. And well, here's the thing. I think, first of all, we need to, like I said, be aware. We need to educate ourselves. We need to be aware. Second of all, we need to stop poo-pooing getting help. You know, many people in our communities and our families are struggling, and they're being told, hey, you're on your own. You know, tough it up. Be strong.
But I say something about this. You know that minorities are used as lab rats.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, and I say that. There's one particular gazillionaire that has a patent on, you know, vaccines. And the first place they want to try it is heavily populated countries, Africans, Black folks. You know that they gave the smallpox to the Native Americans. You know what they did to us down in Tuskegee and put the gonorrhea in the Black man. So,
but now, April, I know there are not enough of us, but now there are African American doctors. There are, you know, Hispanic doctors. There are more, you know, therapists who are available to our community. So we do need to look for people who are compatible with and understand us, but we first have to be willing to get help and to recognize, I think the biggest thing is to recognize that this, when someone in your family has a substance use problem, that is not an individual problem. There's not something wrong with them. There's something that happened to them or to their family. And so rather than us saying, oh, well, you know, Joe over there, you know, he's just a drunk. I mean, we need to be looking at what happened to Joe and what happened to Joe's family. You may not see what happened unless you look back a generation, but there's something that happened. And so if we stop pointing the finger at Joe and start lifting up the rug, you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff under that rug.
Right.
It's going to come out, right?
Right. And then accepting that and being truthful, you know, because again, like you said, it's so much shame. Yeah. And everybody knows what's going on in the world today. There's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah. Okay. But the shame really is based on this whole thing of it's your problem. It's not my problem. What I'm saying, it is our community's problem because of slavery, because of what happened to Native Americans. It's their community's problem. And you see that in cultures around the world where, you know, the same things have happened. So the shame belongs on the people who, you know, created it in the first place. It shouldn't belong on the individual. And so if we back away from saying what's wrong with Joe or Jane or whoever, Belinda or, you know, Shaniqua.
Yeah, then, Laquan, Taiwan.
Look, there you go. If we take the blame off of Laquan and say, hey, what happened to Laquan?
Right.
You know, and the same thing, you know, I saw a wonderful video about a group that's working in prisons. And they're bringing the information from the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study to prisoners. And prisoners are now looking at, oh my goodness, yeah, okay, now I can see why this happened in my life. And I can also see that my mother was a victim of domestic violence or, you know, rape or whatever. And so she didn't know how to deal with her stuff. And then that affected me and so on. And so it's not about saying you're not accountable. It's really about saying, how can we deal with this in a way that goes a little deeper than just pointing the finger and shame?
Right. And without medication. So again, identifying.
First being aware. Yeah. Then getting help, investigating on your own, you know, read that book. That's a great book to read. It's very clear. And, you know, and then reaching out for help. And I think, you know, you can find people who understand. It's not as easy, but now with COVID, we're seeing a lot more telemedicine. Right. So, you know, there you can reach out to someone in another city.
Or you. So tell my friends how to get in contact with you, Carolyn, because I think, you know, you are adding this to your menu of services as a physician. And I thank you. You're easy to talk to. You're loving, you're caring, you're supportive. I don't care, you know, sexual orientation, your weight, your color, none of that matters because you are a caring, empathetic person. And again,
I still want to hire you to do my marketing.
Well, you know I got you right here in the palm of my hands. I absolutely adore you. We have been friends for a while, and
you know it's mutual. We don't get to see each other much these days, but I still love you.
I tell you, you've been tough on me sometimes, but what you have told me, I follow through on, and I've done it.
Yeah.
So I've done it.
Well, you're looking fantastic. That's all I have to say.
Well, you know, I'm telling you, it is by the grace of God and staying in the house.
It's really by staying in the house, Mom.
I'm just nervous. And before we conclude, I got to get over this anxiety because I love people. Mm-hmm. You know I love people. I just sop you up with a biscuit. But I've learned to really kind of keep my distance. I've learned to extend my hand instead of, you know, embracing you like this. But the psychological trauma that people are going to face as we re-enter back into society, as we go back into the workplace. You're going to always be looking at the person next to you with a side eye. I'm concerned about our food source. It may not be the food itself, but the people that are preparing our foods. You know, the parks are about to open up. Beaches are about to open up. Yesterday I went to the...
Well, I mean, you know, that's why it's so important to...
Yeah, yes,
look for the facts and follow what the facts show. Okay. Because, you know, the beaches may open up, but we still may need to be socially distant. Right. But you know what? I mean, I think one of the good things that's coming out of this is recognizing you don't have to hug somebody or touch them or be next to them to express caring. You know, I find people that I passed 6 feet away from me.
They're smiling
now. They're waving more. Whereas before the pandemic, you'd be walking down the street and people were just, you know, doing their thing. Now there's, you know, and that's a good thing.
But look at the global change. The water is cleaner. The air is cleaner.
You can hear the birds.
Parents are identifying with these little people that they call children.
Yeah.
I was reading an article today in a British newspaper about how, you know, the extremely affluent and rich are learning how to clean their house. They don't know how to iron. They don't know how to change the sheets. They have 30 bedrooms or 30 rooms.
Yeah.
They don't know how to do a damn thing. So,
yeah, or cook for themselves or whatever.
And the spiritual awakening.
Yeah.
The spirit, people are going... making it a conscious effort to go inside themselves and talk to whoever God it is, to be silent, to meditate, to work their body with yoga, because they have no other options and no other choice.
I know. And that's the opportunity for all of us, you know, is to go deeper instead of to stay on the surface with fear and anxiety, just to allow that anxiety to move you deeper into, you know, yourself, to your authentic self, to be able to tap into reserves we didn't even know we had, you know, like our parents went through the war and all this other stuff, and we've had pretty good lives, you know, other than the Vietnam War.
Again, you know, and I tell people all the time when they come up with that, you know, that racial stuff, civil rights was handed to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know anything about segregation. So for me to just attack somebody about something that I don't know based upon what someone else did.
Yeah.
It's disingenuous on my behalf. But also,
yeah, I mean, I went to segregated schools as a kid all the way up until high school.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I'm old, April. I'm old.
And ain't nothing old about you. But again, look at you, a fair-skinned, curly-haired, Black woman that could have very easily passed, but you were still subjected to that. And there trauma associated with that.
Yeah,
so thank you so much for
raising. Well, you didn't let me say how people can get a hold of me.
But I ain't finished with you.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. But, you know, but I want to thank you because you have really, you know, opened yourself up and sound the alarm to tell people that you think it's over, but it is not over. This is really the beginning. Okay, this is an opportunity for us to change. I don't know what's going on, but I really kind of think that out of all of this, there's going to be a new species of people. But that's a whole nother show. I'll invite you back.
That is totally a whole nother show. But anyway, if people want to see my TED Talk or they want to get a hold of me, they can just go to my website, which is Carolyn Ross. You can see the name down in the corner there.
I'm going to put it on blast everywhere.
Okay, CarolynRossMD.com. My TED Talk is right on the front of my homepage. And there's also a free meditation for those of you who are struggling with anxiety. Got a couple meditations that you can download to help yourself with that. So.
But also tell them about, you know, the food, you know, you work
the Anchor program. Yeah. What I do see patients in my San Diego office now and via telemedicine for depression, anxiety, Suboxone, you know, and eating disorders. But the biggest thing I love is my Anchor program, which is an online non-diet program for people with binge eating disorder, emotional eating, and food addiction. And we meet online once a week, and there's an online curriculum. And the whole point of the program is that reconnecting with your authentic self. It's for people who are tired of dieting and who finally realize that it's not, that the diet is not going to solve the problem, that they've got to do something different. So when you're ready to do something different than dieting, I'm the person to call. And it's just been a really great experience to work with women who are at that point where they're tired of letting people take advantage. They're tired of being told to be quiet. They just want to be themselves, you know?
Right. And one of my favorite quotes, and we'll end with this, is my friend would say to me sometime, she said, "There can only be change when the pain of remaining the same is greater than the pain of change."
Yeah, when the pain of remaining the same is greater than the pain of change. That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's the kind of people that I want to work with. The pain is, they're ready to change.
That's right. So. Influencers and game changers. Thank you, Dr. Carolyn Coccarone.
Thank you, Brain.
I adore you. You know I adore you. And I just can't wait to hug you up, okay?
Thank you, Miss April. We'll do a virtual hug, okay? There you go.
Okay. We got to get back out because we've done so many great things together. I'll be glad we'd be able to share a meal, go to our favorite little restaurant. You know where that is.
I know. That's right. You know where that is.
So I love you from the bottom of my socks, baby, because my heart just isn't deep enough. Okay. Take care of yourself. If you need
too.
You know, I'm masked up, gloved up. I'm there for you, baby.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. Bye, brains.